Animal appeared from nowhere. A massive silver-tipped grizzly sow, with a characteristic hump of muscle across its shoulders, was weaving its head to and fro, and bloody spittle frothed from its muzzle. An arrow thunked into the bowl of a lodgepole pine at Jack's side.
Huh?
There was a small strip of white parchment tied around it with purple ribbon. Keeping a cautious eye on the bear, the boy unpeeled the paper and read the message. Yellow cottage, quarter mile behind you. Turn left at lightning hit live oak. The wind was beginning to rise. Constantly looking over his shoulder, Jack paced out a quarter mile. He gripped the bow in his right hand, an arrow notched and ready to loose. But the silver tip had vanished. For a moment he thought he glimpsed a couple of people on a parallel path. A tall woman with startlingly red hair and a man who wore a white bandage over his eyes. There was the tree, its top splintered and torn by a lightning bolt.
Turn left, turn left, turn left.
The path grew wider, winding uphill, twisting and turning, with a cairn of white stones to mark each bend. Jack saw a fluttering scrap of yellowed paper held against one of the piles of rock by a piece of rusting iron.
Nearly home, Jack. Your mother and me are looking forward to welcome you safe back. Not far to go, lad.
The bow was becoming cold and wet. He looked down at it and found the stout yew had turned into polished ice. The arrow was straw with a tip of smoldering red ash. Ahead of him, something gray and scaled waddled across the path. It looked like a muddy alligator. The sun was gone, and dark clouds swooped over the stark mountaintops all around him. But he could see the cottage. The walls were painted golden yellow, and a lamp hung in the front window to guide the weary traveler home.
Home?
Was it? The word wouldn't fit properly inside his chilled lips. He was less than 100 paces from the trim little house. Behind him, he could dimly hear the howling of a hunting pack of wolves. The bow was melting fast, running through his fingers, and blazing like molten silver. The cottage door opened, and he could see a tall man dressed in a green jerkin.
Oh, come in, son. You're safe now with us.
Jack suddenly found himself in a cheery room with a log fire crackling in the hearth. Copper pans winked from the shelves, and a spread of food was laid out on a dazzling damask cloth. Fresh-baked bread and crisp salad, with slices of smoked ham as thick as a man's finger. Jack picked up one of the china bowls and saw that it held a mass of pulsating white maggots.
Your mother's favorite, Jack. Made them special, she did. She'd be here herself, but she's dead and gone these 15 years.
A sudden burst of thunder seemed to shake the whole building. The lights dimmed, and the fire died away. Jack suddenly began to feel very sick.
You don't look too good, son. Mother's kept your room nice, waiting for you to come on back. Safe and secure, Jackie. Go and have a rest. Your own little bed in your own little room.
The nausea was growing like a bubble of rotten air, filling his stomach, rising through his chest, and squeezing his lungs. It surrounded his heart and made it pound faster. The idea of lying down and sleeping seemed attractive.
In there, son.
His father pointed to a low door in the corner of the room. Jack noticed that the man's fingers were crooked, ending in thick, jagged nails that curved back on themselves. The room was growing darker, and the sickness was surging into his throat.
Oh, gotta lie down.
Safe and secure, Jack? Or insecure and unsafe? Which is it now, boy?
The door opened without his touching it, and the boy stepped through.
No.
His feet slipped away, and he began to fall down a long, polished tunnel.
No!
Faster and faster he fell, and he tried to grab at the sides of the tunnel, his fingers blistering from the speed and heat of his fall. Infinities below him, he could make out a speck of silver-white light, rushing toward him at a dizzying speed.
No!
The desert sands were red with blood. John Barrymore Dix lay flat behind a low bullet-pocked wall, pressed to the warm earth, waiting for the stickies to come at him again. The sky was pale orange, scarred with the drifting remnants of a fearsome chemstorm of scarlet and jagged silver. The air still tasted of ozone from the force and power of the tempest. The rest of the Warwag's crew were dead, butchered by the ceaseless attacks of the gibbering muties. They'd come in waves from the sun-baked arroyos, their suckered hands tearing and ripping at the bodies of the defenders. Bullets scarcely checked the stickies with their rubbery flesh. Lead went in and out, and left only a small hole and a trickle of what passed for blood. You had to shoot a sticky in the head, and pulp its ferocious residual brain. JB knew he'd sent a dozen or more out on the last train to the coast, but there were hundreds more waiting out there. His friends lay around him. The white-haired boy had most of his face missing, exposing the glistening pallor of bone. His satin-finished magnum was by his side, its barrel clogged with blood and mud. The woman had taken her own life, kissing the muzzle of the 9mm Heckler & Koch pistol. Her bright blood was invisible against her matted crimson hair. Maybe that was the best, the cleanest way to buy the farm. All JB could see of the old man was the cracked knee boots protruding from under a pile of muty corpses. The silver sword stick, blade snapped jaggedly in two, lay nearby, the blade reflecting the fire of the nuke-ravaged sky. A dead puppy, head missing, was flung against the bottom of the wall.
Ryan?
He knew there wouldn't be an answer. Not this time. Not anymore. JB could feel bile, hot and sour, churning in his guts. The sun beat down on his head, despite the protection of his dented fedora. His eyes blurred, and he blinked to try to clear them.
Come on, you bastards.
He risked a look over the wall. Nothing. Just the purple sand dunes that stretched out toward the shimmering horizon. JB knelt and reviewed his arsenal of weapons, laid neatly in front of him. He'd field-stripped, oiled, polished, greased, and loaded dozens of them. Each had a round snug under the cocked hammer. All he had to do was heft them and squeeze the cool, curved triggers. He squinted, then rubbed at his eyes. There seemed to be some movement to his left, near a half-burned Joshua tree. JB laid down his Colt Navy pistol and pressed his forehead with the tips of his fingers. His glasses were smeared and dusty, and he wondered whether he should try to clean them before the attack came. His headache was getting worse, and he realized that he was feeling sick, as if someone had kicked him hard in the balls. He wondered which gun to use first. He looked in front of himself again, and saw that there were literally hundreds of different blasters. Right by his boots was a stocky, silenced Sterling Parabellum submachine gun. JB didn't recall having noticed that one before. A pair of elegant rifles were propped against each other, a Ruger M77 and a Steyr Mannlicher, each with a polished walnut stock and a scope sight. Hunting guns. JB couldn't remember where they'd come from. From some of the other dead, he supposed. But as he looked around, the armorer realized that all the bodies had disappeared, both Norms and Muties. The land around him was full of blasters and empty of anything else. The army of stickies was advancing slowly toward him. He couldn't make up his mind as to which blaster to use to defend himself. Something old, like the jumble of wheel-lock and flintlock pistols, or the long 50-caliber sharps. Maybe its classic rainbow trajectory was what he needed to begin picking off the muties at long range. If only his head didn't hurt so much. It was making it difficult for him to think straight. Jimmy closed his eyes and let his head sink forward onto his chest. He tried to steady his breathing, fearing he was going to start throwing up. When he opened his eyes again, the stickies were across the river, pouring up the steep valley toward the ruined church where he was hiding. The sky was darkening fast, and he wondered whether night would fall quickly enough to help him.
Time to start throwing some lead.
JB picked up the nearest blaster from the polished steel racks in front of him. It was a Parker Hale M94, equipped with a folding bipod and a Smith & Wesson Startron 800 passive vision night sight. The armorer worked the bolt and steadied the rifle on the sill of a broken stained glass window. The sight brought the nearest sticky almost within touching distance. JB gently squeezed the trigger.
What? A goddamn misfire? A goddamn misfire? Shit!
He threw down the blaster and snatched up the Nambu.
You gotta be fucking kidding me!
The French rifle.
Ah!
A Walther PPK, plated with a thin layer of pure gold.
Fuck it all to hell!
JB dropped the last of the useless malfunctioning weapons and turned to face the doorway of the church. The headless remains of a crucified man hung above the lintel, one leg missing. The Stickies came walking through the dark entrance. They weren't hurrying, and some of them seemed to be smiling. They reached out toward the helpless man with their spread, suckered hands, ready to draw the skin from the flesh, the eyes from the sockets, the flesh from the bones, the life from the body. The churning pain in JB's head was close to unbearable. It was like having the needle tip of a scalpel drawn slowly around the inside of the skull, slicing tiny wafers of tissue from the brain. The traitor stood near the shattered remnants of the altar, watching as the muti surrounded JB for their butchering.
Help me.
The suckered hands were everywhere, bringing a sucking blackness.
Help me.
JB Dix looked toward the gaunt, remote figure of the traitor.
I don't think so.
Dr. Theophilus Tanner beamed as the puppy came bounding up the dusty street toward him, its tail wagging furiously. A speeding brougham bowled by, driven by a liveried Negro, narrowly missing the eager animal. Doc glimpsed a beautiful, cold-faced woman sitting back on the maroon velvet cushions, ignoring the common people. The dog went to Doc, and he stooped to pat it.
Friendly little chap, is he not, Emily?
He is, my dearest.
The dog began to tremble.
Oh, my.
Emily Tanner backed away from it, lifting the hem of her skirt.